two Alliance security officers walked over to where Corrin and Tycho stood. The female lieutenant spoke with a calm, even voice. "Captain Selku, are you ready to return to your quarters now?" The man suddenly looked very fatigued. "Yes, I believe so." "Thank you for this conversation, Mr. Horn."
"You're welcome, sir."
Tycho nodded to the woman. "After you."
"No, sir. After you."
Her tone struck Corrin as all wrong. He'd assumed she had been offering to escort Captain Selku to his quarters as a courtesy. But the edge in her voice transformed her words into an order.
"She's treating him like a criminal."
"There you are."
Corrin's head came up at the sound of the woman's voice. Just a bit taller than he was, but slender with long legs, Irisi Delaret, one of the two Typharans in the squadron, entered the hangar from the corridor.
"Are you looking for me, Irisi?"
She nodded.
"I was sent to find you. The rest of us are in downtime, going over what happened out there."
"Not enough laughs, so you wanted me to join you?" He shook his head.
"Thanks anyway, some other time."
Irisi took firm hold of his elbow.
"No, now. We want you there so we can apologize."
Corrin hesitated, covering his surprise. She sounded sincere, but she was from Typhara and almost always in Borjace's company. He tried to figure out if she was setting him up, but the gentle way her short black hair lay against the nape of her long neck distracted him.
I'm not sure I'd be good company."
She tugged him gently toward the corridor.
"Look, we all used your data because Commander Antilles told us our exercise involved doing just that. It wasn't until we made our runs that he told each of us what had happened, what he had done to you. He ordered us to say nothing to you except to report our scores. None of us felt good about what happened, and we want to make it up to you."
Convinced, he started walking with her.
"So, how did you get the job of coming after me? You picked the Sabak card with the lowest value?"
Irisi smiled at him, her eyes dominating a delicately sculpted face with high cheekbones and a strong jawline.
"I came to get you, while Nawara Ven and Risati Iner tried to talk some sense into Broar. You'd abandon your friend, a fellow Typharan, to a conversation with a Twi'lek lawyer?" Her laughter echoed through the corridor.
"What gave you the impression we were friends?"
"Perhaps the fact that you spend a lot of time with him."
"Better the Moff you know than the Emperor's new envoy. I could never truly be friends with anyone who grew up in the wealthy Zoltan corporate culture as he did. Broar's people are known for being rather haughty and obstreperous."
"My people are with Zuckfra, the true leader in back to production and refinement."
They went down an escalator and walked across a small chamber. Beyond it lay a noisy gallery with next to no visible light, unless the bright colors of strobing neon tracery were considered lighting. Voices from dozens of human and alien throats mingled in the din. The rest of Rogue Squadron had gathered in a corner of the Tap Cafe. Corrin spotted Gavin Darklighter first. Broar Jace and Nawara appeared to be deep in conversation. Lujane Forge, seeing Corrin, smiled at him and rapped her mug on the table.
"Corrin's here!"
Stepping forward, Jace offered Corrin his hand.
"I want you to know I would not have flown with your data had I known. I'll be the first to sign a letter of protest to General Song."
Gavin looked at Corrin.
"What he did to you wasn't right."
Corrin smiled.
"Commander Antilles had a point to make with me, and he made it. All of you being here like this, your discomfort with what happened and your desire to protest my treatment means that I know you're going to be there when I need you to be. And you know I'm willing to do what I need to do to make sure our squadron can do its job.
There's nothing Commander Antilles can do to us that will be worse than what the Empire has already done on hundreds of worlds."
The pilot of the Imperial shuttle looked back over his shoulder.
"Agent Lore, you'll probably want to strap yourself in. We're coming out of hyperspace to Imperial Center."
Kirtan fumbled with the restraining harness. Since Gilbastar's death, he had furiously searched for any leads the man had offered during his interrogation that would bring the Empire closer to Corrin Horn and the other Corsac operatives under Bastar's command. They all seemed to be dead ends. In his report, Kirtan had tried to stress the positive,
but hours after sending it, he had received his summons to the Imperial capital. Now he looked out at the dark world below. The Imperial palace stood tall, like a volcano that had thrust up through the heart of the metropolis. As the ship swooped lower, he saw massive buildings armored with layers of ferrocrete and designed to house thousands of people on each level. This was Coruscant, the heart of an empire that once had boasted millions of worlds. Kirtan ran a finger along his collar to loosen it, though logic argued against the Empire's willingness to spend the money it cost to bring him to Imperial Center just to kill him. He knew he had failed, and the price for failure was dear indeed. The guards who escorted him from the ship led him to a large room, the far wall of which was constructed entirely out of glass. A tall, slender woman stood in silhouette before it. "You are Kirtan Lur." It came not as a question, but a statement full of import. Kirtan tried to keep his voice as even. "Reporting is ordered. I can explain my report. Agent Lur, if I had wanted your report explained, I would have had your superiors extract the explanation from you." She paused meaningfully. "Do you have any idea who I am?" Kirtan's mouth had gone dry. "No, ma'am." "I am Issani Isard. I am Imperial Intelligence. I rule here now, and I am determined to destroy this rebellion. I believe you can aid me in my task." Wedge Antilles smiled as the meeting with Admiral Akbar and General Somm got underway. "I think you'll see, sir, that the squadron is coming along quite well." The Mon Calamari looked up from the datapad on his desk.
"Your performance figures and exercise scores are commendable. I am now going to make an extraordinary request of you. I'm making Rogue Squadron operational within the week."
"What?" Wedge felt as if he'd been snared by a Stokely stun net. "It's only been a month since the roster was finalized, sir. I need more time."
Solemn folded his arms. "We would all like that luxury, Commander, but we don't have it. I'm taking my Y-Wings operational in 2 weeks.
Admiral, can I at least run some astronav exercises to get my people working together?"
"By all means, Commander. In fact, I have the perfect assignment for you."
Akbar touched his datapad screen, and the office lights dimmed.
A swirling disk of stars appeared suspended between ceiling and floor.
"I will be moving Rogue Squadron from here to Talasea in the Morobi system."
Wedge's eyes narrowed.
"We're going after Coruscant?"
"We're given little choice, really, if we wish to overthrow the last remnants of the Empire. Many of the Moths are adopting a wait-and-see attitude about the New Republic. Others have proclaimed themselves warlords and are doing what they can to consolidate their holdings with those of weaker neighbors. Any of these warlords could decide to turn his forces towards Coruscant, or Imperial Center, as Palpatine renamed it, and, by taking it, proclaim himself heir to Palpatine's throne.
So we have to get there first. It seems to me that an expedient alternative is to let some Moths push themselves forward and have Isard deal with them." Solemn answered.
"Your opinion, Commander Antilles, was heard in our councils. It was decided that leaving anyone to her tender mercies was a crime of grand proportion."
Issani Isard, often referred to as Isard, was the daughter of Palpatine's last internal security director. She had betrayed her father to the Emperor, claiming he was going to defect to the Alliance, and he had been put to death. The Emperor elevated her to her father's position, and she had since risen to fill the power vacuum left by the Emperor's death. Wedge looked at the galactic display.
"You want to see how Isard will hit back? Gauge strength on speed and the nature of response?"
"Yes, as well as determine supply routes for possible disruption. From Talasea, Rogue Squadron will provide escorts to ships setting up safe worlds and supply depots. You will be but one unit of many probing the central Imperial defenses. Commander Antilles, in an effort to minimize damage done by the public profile being given your mission, we will keep your destination secret. We have an Imperial shuttle that Captain Selku will use to bring supplies on your journey."
The display zoomed in on a star system.
The Morobe system is a red-yellow binary, and Talacia is the fourth planet in orbit around the yellow primary. The world is cool and moist, with indigenous insect and reptilian life. There are mammals there as well, feral descendants of the animals brought in for an early farming colony. Your base is on the largest of the island continents. The atmosphere is thick, fog is common, but the world is safe.
Wedge smiled. Home, sweet home. Kirtan Lore clutched his hands behind his back so they would stop trembling. I am in your debt, Madam Director, and at your service. How kind of you to say so, Agent Lore. Isani Isard thumbed a small device. The lights in the room slowly brightened as shields descended over the windows. The light revealed the large, sparely furnished room's high dome ceiling. It suddenly struck Lore. On such a crowded world, such wasted space is the height of luxury. Isard's pacing drew his attention. The intensity and deliberation with which she moved radiated power. Although he guessed that she was 12 years his senior, he found her attractive. Tall and slender, she was classically beautiful, with long black hair streaked with white at the temples. Fear of her, however, overrode any glimmerings of carnal desire. When she looked at him, he knew where the menace dwelt in her. One eye was ice blue. The other eye, the left one, was molten red, with fiery gold highlights. The left eye told him that any failure in service to her would be met with a bloodless retribution promised by her cold right eye. Kirtan shivered, and she smiled. Agent Lore, your personal file has a number of interesting notations. You were rated as having a visual memory retention rate of nearly 100%. He nodded. If I read it or see it, I remember it. This can be a useful tool if applied correctly. Isard's expression lost some of its hardness. In the report about Bostra, you mentioned not using Skirtopanol during his interrogation because he had been dosing himself with loteramine. This was a precaution you learned to take because of the case on Corellia, where doing just that had negative effects, yes? The suspect died. Your report says you used the fact that loteramine masks the presence of blastonecrosis to confront Gil Bastra with his own mortality. When that did not prove effective, you began conventional interrogation. Sleep deprivation, protein starvation, coercive holographic and auditory illusions taken from what I knew of him. It all proved quite promising, until the blastonecrosis began to make his whole body septic. I then initiated treatment for the condition. And this treatment killed him. Her eyes became mismatched slits. Do you know why?
He had a reaction to the back they used to treat him?
Do you know why?
Kirtan was about to offer her the explanation the MD-5 droid had given him, but he knew she would not accept it.
I do not.
Isard hesitated for a second, and Kirtan knew he'd escape punishment by being truthful.
What does ZX1449F mean to you, if anything?
That is the lot number of a batch of Bacta that was contaminated by the Ashern rebels on Typhara. It made its way to Imperial Center and infected nearly 2 million soldiers and citizens. It rendered them allergic to Bacta.
Kirtan frowned.
But Gil Bastra never was on Imperial Center.
You do not know that.
She shook her head slowly. It does not matter, because he could have run into that batch of Bacta almost anywhere. It was ordered disposed of, and I saw to it that much of it was funneled to the black market.
That, however, is not important. What is important is this. Blastonecrosis is a condition that affected roughly 2% of the people who were dosed with that lot of Bacta.
And because I ordered treatment and didn't recognize the significance of the disease, Gil Bastra died.
No.
Isard's eyes hardened.
Gil Bastra committed suicide.
What?
His reports about you are in your file. Foster was amazingly perceptive. He wrote that you rely on your memory too much, trusting that retention of information can somehow compensate for an insufficient amount of analysis. Because you know so much, like the obscure fact about loperamide and scopolamine, you didn't probe deeply enough. If you had, you would have known Baster had a Bacta allergy, and he might still be with us. She slowly exhaled. Baster knew he'd be dead soon. That gave him enough hope to feed you useless information. A revelation hit Lure strongly enough to make him tremble. I've been fooled for even longer than the 2 years I've chased Baster and his confederates down, haven't I? Very good, Agent Lure. That falling out Baster and Horn had was faked. I thought the reason for it was stupid and assumed they were stupid for being at odds over it. This is even better, Agent Lure. Now that this blind spot has been eliminated, letting you see more of what goes on around you, don't backslide. Kirtan slowly nodded. How may I serve you? Your target is the heart of the rebellion. You will be the death of Rogue Squadron. Kirtan frowned. Excuse me? I am no fighter pilot. I know nothing about Rogue Squadron. Ah, but you will find you have a personal stake in this. Our source within the squadron tells us that a friend of yours is a flight leader of remarkable skill. Corran Horn. You see, you already know more about them than you thought you did. Isani Isar gave him an even stare. Do you accept being the instrument of Rogue Squadron's destruction? With pleasure, Madam Director. Kirtan smiled to himself. With the utmost of pleasure indeed.
Corran forced himself to relax. Though Commander Antilles had cast the trip as an exercise in astronavigation and hyperspace jumping, deep down Corran thought a lot was being left unsaid. The mission requirement to bring their personal gear along made Corran think that something more than an exercise was taking place. He had been promoted to lieutenant and given the command of 3-flight. Heading outbound from Folor's scarred gray surface, Corran flew lead. Ural was back to starboard, while Lujain and Anderney were off to port. Tycho Selku was bringing up the rear in a captured Lambda-class shuttle, Forbidden. Corran keyed his comm.
Let's keep it close, 3-flight. We follow 1-flight on this leg and 2-flight on the next. After that, we're leading, so let's be prepared.
Whistler began counting down. Then Corran engaged the X-Wing's hyperdrive and set back as stars filled the view screen. The first leg was to take them about an hour. The course brought them slightly closer to the core. And Corran scanned. Corran knew the Imperial capital was not their intended target, at least not for this flight. His more immediate concern was plotting the course for the third leg of the jump. While he had not been told their final destination, Commander Antilles had given him a list of 20 starting and ending points, and he had calculated the best courses he could see for making the jumps from one to the next. The direction, speed, and duration of the first leg allowed him to eliminate all but two of the courses.
Whistler, bring up the course for the Morobe system.
Yes, I know you did the best you could on this plotting.
Freeze output there.
He tapped the monitor.
At the Chorax system, you have us skirting it by 0.25 parsecs. There's only one planetary mass in that system, and the sun isn't that big. Since the Chorax system comes up so early in our leg, if you pull us another tenth of a parsec closer, we should come out of hyperspace close enough to Morobe's habitable planets that we won't need to make an in-system jump to find gravity if we need it.
Given the trickiness of astronavigation and hyperspace jumps, courses were frequently plotted to brush by inhabited systems. If a hyperdrive went out in mid-flight or refused to engage, it was good to be close to worlds from which help could be summoned. The first two legs of the journey ended uneventfully. Just before they made the jump to light speed, Commander Antilles shot Corran the coordinates for the third jump. So, it's the Morobe system after all. Corran congratulated himself as he made the jump to hyperspace he had plotted in advance.
Fine, you did the calculation.
The astromech started scrolling sensor data over the cockpit screen, but none of it made sense to Corran.
There's another stellar mass in the Chorax system. That's impossible. Unless...
Before he could broadcast a warning to the rest of Rogue Squadron, the automatic safety cutout in the hyperdrive kicked in. The snub fighter burst through an incandescent white wall and into the outer reaches of the Chorax system.
And right into the middle of a running light site.
Lockout spoils into position. Whistler, have you ID'd those ships yet?
The big ship was an Imperial Interdictor cruiser. Its quartet of gravity well projectors created a hyperspace shadow roughly equivalent to that of a fair-sized star. It wasn't there to trap the Rogue Squadron, however. Running from the cruiser, which Whistler identified as the Black Ass, was a modified Vado-class star yacht. Corrin had seen plenty of modified yachts during his time with the Corellian security, and this one even looked vaguely familiar. Most often, the yachts were used to haul contraband. While he had no love for smugglers, he had even less for the Empire. Corrin glanced at his screen, then keyed his comms.
Ties. Squints. I mean interceptors. Looks like a dozen of them. Rogue One, what are your orders?
Wedge's voice came back cool.
Engage them, but watch the cruiser's guns.
The Interdictor and its ties were coming in. Corrin hit the trigger and his first proton torpedo sped in at its target. Another X-Wing torpedo streaked past him and raced toward an interceptor. Ural's torpedo reduced his target to fire and scrap metal.
Good shot, Ten. Scratch one squint. Cover me, I'm going after mine.
Ratcheting the throttle up to full, Corrin corkscrewed down through a roll that brought him out on an interceptor's tail. He triggered a burst of lasers that burned armor from the interceptor's wing, but failed to destroy it. The interceptor pilot came up fast and flew in a straight line to meet him. Corrin shot across the TIE's line of flight to sail in on its tail. He lined the interceptor up in sight and blew it apart with two laser blasts.
I have your wing, Ten.
He saw Earl's X-Wing shoot ahead of him and into the ion wake of an interceptor. The Gann's first shot struck sparks and armor from the fighter's central ball. One more, Ural, and you have him.
9 and 10, break hard port. Get out of there.
Ural's compliance with Wedge's order came immediately. Corrin started to turn to port, but the vast expanse of the Black Aft's bulk filled his view screen. Then a blue bolt of ion cannon energy sizzled in and battered down the X-Wing's shield. The Astromech's screams died abruptly, and Corrin was slammed against the left side of the cockpit, the stick pressing into his chest. Even without seeing the stars swirling around him like dust motes in a Tatooine sand tornado, he knew what had happened. The ion blast, in addition to shutting Whistler off, had knocked out one sublight engine. This put him into a flat spin, completely out of control. The only thing he could do was to shut his engines down and go for a restart. That was easier said than done. The emergency shutdown panel was on the right side of the cockpit. Since he was mashed against the opposite side of the panel, it remained just beyond the reach of his outstretched fingers. Gritting his teeth, Corrin levered himself off the cockpit wall with his left elbow until he could hit the shutdown panel with his right elbow. The thrumming of the port engine died, leaving him alone with the sound of his own breathing in the cockpit. He punched the reset button and hoped for the best. What he wanted to hear was the return of the engine thrum, but what he got was nothing. Without the engines, he had no power.
This is Rogue Nine. I could use some help here.
Without waiting for a reply, he flipped on the proton torpedo launch circuits. Lacking sensors, his ability to hit anything was nil, but at least he could get off a shot or two. Then he saw a series of proton torpedo launches from the X-Wings explode against the Interdictor's hull. The big ship executed a roll that combined with a loop to reverse its course.
He's running! They've driven it off! Yes!
His jubilance died as he realized that meant the cruiser was heading back in his direction, and the surviving TIE interceptors were flying along in its wake like fledgling Minox.
Whistler, you're lucky you're not seeing this. It'll be ugly.
Rogue Nine, do you copy?
I copy.
It took a minute before Corrin recognized the voice as Tycho Selkus in the supply ship.
This is Rogue Null. You have squints coming your way. I'm Mark II.
Corrin craned his neck to see where Tycho and the shuttle were, but he couldn't see a thing.
I'm naked here, so please get them off me.
Not possible, Nine. Clear your sensors to 354.3.
What? I'm a sitting hut here.
So you have indicated, Nine. Clear your sensors.
Corrin punched the frequency code into the keypad.
Done, Null.
Happy hunting, Nine.
Korin's targeting display came back alive and his monitor showed targeting data from Tycho's ship, the Forbidden. Beyond the display, the TIEs juked to try to shuck the shuttle, but Tycho managed to keep its sights locked on the lead interceptor. Korin squeezed the trigger, sending two torpedoes streaking out at the lead interceptor. So intent had the Imperial pilots been on losing the shuttle behind them, they had no chance to react to Korin's missiles. The proton torpedoes blasted through the cockpit of the first ship, ripping the craft to bits and igniting the ion engine fuel into a swollen ball of fire. The second set of missiles lanced through the fireball and blew one wing off their target. The squint exploded brilliantly, blotting out the image of the interdictor going to light speed. Korin popped the cockpit canopy seals after the yacht killed its maneuvering jets, and Talacia's thick fog descended over the ships. After the battle, while the X-Wing was still without power, the yacht had come back and picked him up. He jumped down to the ground, then turned as a hatch opened on the underside of the yacht and the captain descended. He was surprised to see that it was a woman, since few of the independent smugglers were female. A gun belt encircled her slender waist, and her long black hair fell to mid-back. Korin wiped his hands on his jumpsuit. "Thanks for the ride back here." She returned a smile as she shortened the distance between them.
"Thanks for the save back there."
He extended his hand to her. "I'm Korin Horn." Something dangerous flashed through her brown eyes. "Are you any relation to Hal Horn?" "He is... was my father."
"Why?"
"Because my father was Booster Tarek. Your father hounded him and had him sent to Kessel."
"I knew this ship looked familiar. This is a Pulsar Skate."
"I can see you two have already met." Korin whirled around and quickly saluted Wedge. "Yes, sir." The woman planted her fist on her narrow hips. "You didn't tell me who this pilot was, because you knew I wouldn't have transported him, right?" Wedge smiled easily. "I suspected there might have been some friction." "How have you been, Merax?"
"Paying for spare parts and fuel."
Merax kissed Wedge on the cheek. Korin's eyes narrowed.
"Sir, you realize the Pulsar Skate is a ship with a well-documented history of smuggling, and that Booster Tarek is one of the more notorious smugglers who ever flew out of Corellia."
Wedge cut him off with a scowl.
"He also helped me track down the pirates who destroyed the fueling station and killed my parents. Pirates Corsec never caught."
Wedge gave Merax a hug.
"Merax isn't her father," Wedge said to Korin. "Ever since he retired, she's been running a lot of supplies for the Alliance."
Giving Merax a hard stare, he said, "And Korin isn't his father either. If he hadn't made some last-minute adjustments to the course we were taking, we'd not have ended up in the Chorak system to save you." Korin and Merax apologized to each other and shook hands. Wedge jerked a thumb at the Pulsar Skate.
"Merax, do you know where your shipment was going?"
She shrugged.
"I was supposed to rendezvous with the ship for transfer, or coordinates. According to the manifest, it was a lot of basic stuff for setting up a base. You could probably use most of it here."
"I don't doubt it." Wedge fished a cylindrical comlink from a pocket of his flight suit and flicked it on with his thumb. "Antilis Entre."
"Entre here, sir. I've been trying to reach you since we landed."
Wedge rolled his eyes skyward. "I'm sure you have. No time to talk now. I need you to get a salvage crew with a lift crane over here to get Horn's X-Wing and R2 unit. You also need to get the ship's manifest from the Pulsar Skate. Find out where that shipment of supplies was going, and see if you can arrange for what we need to remain here."
"Yes, sir. As I was saying, sir..."
"Antilles out." Wedge turned the comlink off and shoved it deep into his pocket again. "Tycho said he didn't have any trouble with the droid on the trip out here, but why not? I can't imagine." Wedge tossed Merax an abbreviated salute.
"We'll talk more later, Merax."
Korin fell in step with his commander.
"Sir, Captain Selku was able to get a torpedo lock on those two interceptors.
Why didn't he shoot them himself?" Wedge hesitated, instantly putting Korin on his guard.
"The Forbidden is being modified for training purposes. While it has the sensor package for concussion missiles, it doesn't carry any and couldn't shoot them if it did."
"Then why didn't he take them with his lasers?
Lambda-class shuttles have lasers."
Wedge's reply came tight and laced with frustration. "The Forbidden does not."
Corrin glanced down at the ground. Commander, I saw Alliance Security escorting Captain Selku around on Folor. What's going on here? Wedge took a deep breath. Lieutenant, I want you to understand two things. First, I have the utmost trust in Captain Selku. Do you understand? Yes, sir. Second, the matter to which you allude is a private one, concerning Captain Selku alone. Because of it, he has agreed to have limitations placed upon himself. Both he and I believe bringing the issue up will only serve as a distraction to the squadron. Corrin nodded slowly. I see your point, sir. I won't mention it to anyone else. Good. One more thing, sir. Yes, Lieutenant? Corrin looked back toward the pulsar's gate. Back there, you mentioned that Corellian security never caught the pirates who destroyed the Gus Trita station and killed your parents. My father got that case and worked hard on it. He didn't give up. He just didn't have your connections on the other side of the law. I think, if my father had known about Booster Tarek helping you find them, he'd have cut him some slack, and Booster wouldn't have done time in the spice mines. Wedge reached out and slapped Corrin lightly on the shoulder. Booster clearly wasn't a Jedi, nor was he Sith-spawn, and the time on Kessel got him out of the business. In a more candid moment, Mirax will probably admit the 2 years he spent in the dark was good for her father. I doubt she and I will share many candid moments, sir. Really? I think you two would get along quite well. Our fathers openly hated each other, sir. Not the best foundation for a lasting friendship.
Sir! Sir!
Both men looked up as Imtray materialized out of the Telesian fog. Wedge said,
Imtray, good. I'll leave you to discuss the condition of his X-Wing with Lieutenant Horn. Find me after that.
Corrin read an if you can in Wedge's smile as he walked away. The droid canted his clamshell head to the side. After spouting a lot of technical details, he concluded,
Your R2 unit will be fine, sir. He shut himself down before the ion blast could do it.
Great. Now about my X-Wing. I blew a phi-inverted lateral stabilizer.
That is correct, sir.
Imtray handed Corrin the datapad.
We'll relay the information back to General Salm. We should have the part in a month or two at the most.
Corrin's jaw dropped. A month or two?
Provided they have the part and you don't get pushed back in the priority list.
Priority list?
Yes, sir. You brought your X-Wing with you and have never formally signed it over to the Alliance. Regulations state that repairs to such craft are to be made only after repairs to authorized craft have been completed. Sir, of all the members of Rogue Squadron, I would have thought you would appreciate adherence to regulations.
Regulations have their place, but not when they hurt. Can't you just scrounge the part or something?
Imtray froze in position, the flashing light in his eyes being the only indication he was still working.
Corrin luxuriated in the cessation of the droid's chatter, but it went on far longer than seemed normal. The eye flashes became asynchronous, and this worried Corrin a bit.
Imtray?
The eyes lit up again, and Corrin would have sworn they were brighter.
I'll shoot a requisition up through channels, but I think I can find you something sooner than anything we get from command. You're a pilot. My job is to keep you flying. Consider it done. Even the voice sounded different to Corrin.
Imtray, are you all right? Is the moisture getting to you?
I'm fine, sir. The moisture is no problem.
The droid turned smartly on his heel and walked away. Corrin stared after him, then shivered. Wedge sat with his back against the wall of a room in what had once been Talasea's planetary governor's palace. The name sounded grander than the building it described. Built with heavy beams of dark native wood and plaster slathered over wooden slats, it reminded him of the reconstructions of primitive settlements he'd seen in museums on Corellia. The incongruity struck him as he watched his pilots sitting around a couple of tables, using their hands to describe the twists and turns they went through and what they had taken to calling the Route of Hinsara. 2 weeks after arriving at Talasea, Rogue Squadron had been assigned to rescue a downed Alliance craft on the planet of Hinsara, and in the process met a large Imperial force. 36 TIEs, 6 interceptors, 6 bombers, and 24 starfighters. The X-Wing pilots had not only routed the Imperials, they had gotten clear without a single casualty.
They did a good job out there today, Wedge said to Tycho, who had joined him for a celebratory drink.
Tycho smiled broadly.
They did better than good. They were spectacular. If I hadn't been there, I'd think it was propaganda.
The Twi'lek, Nuara Venn, stood and slipped one of his brain tails over his shoulder as if it were a scarf, then wove his way through tables to where the commanding officers sat.
Forgive me, noble leaders, but we require your esteemed personages to act as a tribunal to adjudicate a question.
Wedge couldn't keep a smile from his face.
Please proceed, Counselor. Thank you, sir.
Nuara turned back to the other pilots.
First, we have the case of the worst pilot in the unit. May I present Gavin Darklighter, who won this award by virtue of not getting anything out there today?
Gavin scowled. Wedge knew the award had to sting badly, but the Tatooine pilot was young.
We have determined there should be a punishment of some sort, to encourage an improvement in performance.
Wedge turned to face Tycho.
Idea, sir?
Tycho held a finger up. Strikes me that apprenticing Gavin to the best pilot, having him run errands and the like, might be an incentive.
Bror Jay smiled broadly and tugged Gavin's flight suit.
Good. You can start your service by getting me another mug of lum.
Wedge frowned.
How is it that you, Mr. Jace, are considered the best pilot? You only had 5 kills today, and Mr. Horn had 6. If we average them over the last 2 engagements, then Mr. Horn has 4.5, with you, Mr. Quirk, and me, at 2.5 each.
Nuara smiled, flashing pointed teeth.
You have hit upon the crux of the matter, sir. Mr. Jace argues that percentages tell the true story. He killed 5 of the 6 bombers he faced, meaning he downed 85%. Mr. Horn, on the other hand, shot only 6 of 30, giving him a kill percentage of 20%.
Wedge shook his head. This is ridiculous. Percentages have no place in this.
Corrin stood up and glared over at Bror.
If you don't mind, sir, I'm willing to let things be figured by percentages. I'm willing to make it even, and I'll even concede this round to you.
Corrin rested his right hand on Gavin's shoulder.
What I'm willing to do is average Gavin's kills in with mine. The one he got at Chorax adds to my 9, then we split that in half. That puts us even at an average of 5 kills. You and I are both aces now, and so is he.
Kirtan Lor scratched at the reddish, raw patch of flesh behind his right ear. Rachak Roziola was a virus that got to everyone who came to this world.
Only time made it better. He pored over the data from Hinsara again, correlating figures and sensor tracks with known performance parameters for X-Wings. All the ships in the squadron appeared to be operating within 2 standard deviations of the mean of Rebel specifications. This data, combined with what he had been able to put together after the fight in Chorax system, brought him closer than ever to Rogue Squadron. He was sure of it. Now all he had to do was figure out where the squadron would be heading next. He knew that the X-Wings, in arriving at Chorax, had not expected to be dragged out of hyperspace. That meant their entry vector, if drawn as a line through space, would point out their intended destination. Kirtan plotted that line through his data model, then asked the computer to sort the candidate worlds according to their proximity to any world on that line. One world had a perfect correlation with that line. Kirtan smiled.
Talacia, in the Morobi system. We know where you are, Rogue Squadron. Now we will crush you.
Corrin's eyes snapped open. It was still night. He knew that no sound had awakened him, but he also knew that something was wrong. He glanced over at Ural's cot and saw that it was empty.
That wasn't much of a surprise. Gans needed only a fraction of the sleep humans did.
He threw open his sleeping bag and pulled on his flight suit. At the open doorway to the cottage, he crouched in the shadows. He'd have given his right arm for a blaster, but it was stored in Talacia's flight center. The unmistakable squish of mud beneath boots alerted him to the presence of someone just outside the cottage.
then the snout of a blaster carbine poked through the doorway. A leg encased in the slate-gray armor worn by stormtroopers on commando missions followed it. Korin exploded up from his crouch, slammed his fist into the stormtrooper's throat, and flung the man into the center of the cottage. Korin pulled the man's blaster pistol from his holster, tucked it up beneath the trooper's chin, and pulled the trigger. Korin winced.
He who carries a blaster set on kill dies by a blaster set on kill.
Tugging the dead trooper's ammo belt free, he noticed, in addition to erg clips for the blasters, a number of pouches. Opening one, he saw compact silver cylinders, and a shiver ran through him.
Explosive charges. Some must already have been set.
A noise in the doorway made Korin spin. A stormtrooper stood there, staring down at him. Korin groped for the blaster pistol. Then he noticed that the stormtrooper's hands were empty, and more importantly, his feet were 2 inches off the ground. Ural cast the body aside, and it crumpled to the floor.
Ural apologizes for having left you undefended. Ural was out walking when the presence of these interlopers became apparent.
How many?
The Gan shook his head. 2 less. Ural saw 4 others at various points on the perimeter.
And our sentries?
Gone.
Not good. Stormtroopers travel in squads of 9. Let's figure 24 with the crew of whatever brought them here. We have to assume the others are rigging the flight center to blow. We have to warn everyone. The Gand led the way out into the misty darkness. Suddenly, Ural pressed a 3-fingered hand gently to Korin's chest. He held up 1 finger, then signaled in a looping motion. Korin nodded and sighted the carbine along the line where Ural had pointed. The Gand slipped to the left and immediately disappeared in the fog. Korin moved forward, carefully pushing his way through the thick vegetation at the fringe of the compound. About where he had expected his target to be, he found Ural crouched over a prostrate stormtrooper. Ural unfastened the last catches on the armor, then pulled it free and handed it to Korin.
You shall have exoskeleton too.
Korin smiled and slipped the armor on. He strapped on this stormtrooper's gun belt too. The 2 blasters he now carried made him feel slow. Ural hefted the other carbine, then headed off into the night. Korin followed, and they returned to the flight compound. At the first room in the center, the Gan crossed to where Shiel the Shistadanin lay, while Korin approached Gavin's bed. As he laid his hand over the boy's mouth, he felt him start.
Gavin, be quiet, it's me, Korin.
Shiel awoke with a low growl, but stopped after sniffing the air. He slipped from the bed and crouched along with Korin and the Gan at Gavin's bedside. In whispers, Korin and Ural explained what was happening. Then Korin looked over at the 2 aliens.
Since you both can navigate in the dark, you should head out to the hangar.
He passed Shiel 2 spare clips from his belt, then stripped off one of his gun belts and shoved it at Gavin.
Gavin and I will work our way through the center here and try to attract their attention. If you get a clue to where their ship is...
The hall light went out.
Uh-oh.
Gavin shucked the pistol from his holster and the power selection lever clicked. The 2 aliens left through the window, and Korin pulled open the door, stepped into the hallway, and fired a burst. 2 bolts caught 1 stormtrooper in the chest and tossed him backward into another trooper. The dead man's finger jerked his carbine's trigger, sending a line of bolts down the hallway. Korin dove, slamming his shoulder into the wall. Red light flashed by the doorway near the head of the hall, the flare in a stormtrooper's eyeplate. Korin realized that the room contained a 3rd stormtrooper, and that at least 1 of the squadron's pilots lay dead in bed. Korin's 2nd burst knocked down the stormtrooper rising from beneath the first man's body. Then the trooper in the room at the head of the hallway emerged, at the same time Gavin came through the doorway of his room.
Gavin, no!
The kid triggered 1 shot, while the trooper filled the hallway with a steady stream of fire. Korin scythed the muzzle back and forth across the hallway. He heard Gavin grunt and fall behind him. His own shots cut the legs out from under the stormtrooper. The doors all along the hallway swung open. Korin saw Nuora then.
The place is rigged to blow! Get everyone clear!
Korin sprinted down the hallway, leaping over the trio of dead stormtroopers.